is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
The government assured parents and stakeholders of education that this time around, maximum security has been put in place to ensure the smooth function of schools in the Northwest and the Southwest region. But what do we get every day? Students being attacked left and right, teachers also victims.
That's school teacher Leslie Tabbitt in Cameroon talking about attacks, abductions, and rebel areas since they reopened schools. Details coming up. Also, conflict continues in Ethiopia's Tigray region. In Tanzania, John Magufuli is sworn in for a second 5-year term as president. All these and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Ethiopian Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed told the nation the military will carry out further operations this week in response to deadly attack on a military base by Tigray's regional government. Ethiopia's parliament has endorsed a 6-month state of emergency on the region as well. All communications remain cut off in the region, making it difficult to verify news coming from the government. The capital of Tigray, Mekele, appeared calm today, but skirmishes took place elsewhere, a source told the Associated Press, speaking on condition of anonymity. Observers warn that a civil war in Africa's second most populous country could destabilize the already turbulent Horn of Africa. U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, in a statement overnight, said the U.S. is deeply concerned by reports that the Tigray People's Liberation Front carried out attacks on Ethiopian National Defense Force based in the Tigray region Tuesday. He urged immediate action to restore the peace and de-escalate tensions. Authorities in Cameroon say schools in rebel areas that reopened for the first time in 4 years are again being abandoned due to lack of security. Separatist forces are blamed for recent attacks that killed at least 6 and 7 school children. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Yaounde.
In a video shared on Cameroon social media, some armed rebels ordered teachers at the Kulu Memorial College in the southwestern town of Limbe to strip naked. Teachers and students are shown crying for help as the teachers are humiliated, then ordered to close the school and to leave. Cameroon authorities confirmed the school on Wednesday was attacked. Limbe teacher Leslie Tabbitt refuses to instruct class until the government fulfills its promise to protect schools.
The government assured parents and stakeholders of education that this time around, maximum security has been put in place to ensure the smooth functioning of schools in the Northwest and the Southwest region. But what do we get every day? Students being attacked left and right, teachers also victims.
Cameroon's Anglophone rebels have been fighting since 2017 to create an independent state for English speakers separate from French-speaking majority Cameroon. Last month, 140 schools in the troubled northwest and southwest regions reopened for the first time in 4 years after Cameroon's government said those areas were secure. But the military acknowledges that in the past 3 weeks, rebels have killed at least 6 teachers and 7 children, abducted 23 teachers and set 3 schools on fire. The governor of Cameroon's northwest region, Deben Chofo, says about 20 of the schools that reopened in October have closed once again. And he admits several thousand students and teachers at other schools in the region are too scared to attend, despite added troops, which the governor called a special security device.
It is not possible security men to be behind every student. We are asking them to continue going to classes because after a sad incident, a special security device has been set up by the generals in charge of security at the level of the headquarters of the region and in the other divisions to accompany the students.
Separatist groups have demanded that schools in the north, west and southwest remain closed until the government withdraws troops from what the rebels call their territory. Despite the threats, President of the Cameroon Union of Parents and Teachers, Peter Ndikum, urged students and teachers to brave the attacks.
The school system is under attack. We want to encourage our kids. Despite their ages, they have a responsibility to write their own history. They are living within a period of consternation within the Anglophone subsystem. The only way for them to make history is not to abandon the classroom. The first element is that of courage. To the parents, they should be able to realize that this call for independence is a sterile struggle.
But the risk for teachers, parents and students was underscored Thursday as a funeral was held for the 7 school children killed October 24 by suspected rebels. The attack on a private school in the southwest town of Kumba was condemned internationally as a massacre and a grim reminder of the conflict's toll on children. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Yaounde.
Tanzania's populist president John Magufuli has taken the oath of office for a second 5-year term. The Associated Press reports that police and the army tightened security ahead of the ceremony, and the leaders of 2 main opposition parties were charged with organizing unlawful assembly and demonstrations, demanded the disembarkment of the Electoral Commission and other actions. The opposition claims the election was riddled with irregularities. The U.S. and others have also noted credible allegations that call the vote results and the country's democratic ideals into question. A Kenyan teachers' union is calling on the government to give guidance to older teachers and those suffering from chronic diseases after 35 teachers and 17 students tested positive for COVID-19 in the past week and 2 teachers died. The call comes a day after Kenya's President Uhuru Kenyatta hinted he might reintroduce restrictions after a jump in confirmed daily infections. Mohamed Yusuf reports from Nairobi.
The partial reopening of schools in Kenya enters its 4th week, and at least 35 schools across the country have reported positive coronavirus cases. Tomkins Baraza, who teaches Swahili and history at the Nakuru High School, says teachers fear for their lives.
It's a very big worry for teachers. Now that most of the learners, they are asymptomatic. So you don't know who is having it. If we have mass testing for students in all schools. In all schools, at least, you will find some students having the coronavirus disease.
Baraza's school is using 12 classes instead of 6 to limit the spread of the virus and has yet to report a positive case. Kenya has recorded a growing number of COVID-19 positive cases in recent weeks, and the surge is blamed on the easing of restrictions meant to combat the spread of the virus. Speaking to reporters Monday from the coastal town of Malindi, Health Minister Mutahi Kagwe said 14 of every 100 people tested nationwide turned out to be positive for coronavirus.
There is a sharp increase in positivity rates lately, with a high of 18% this last Saturday. Yesterday, our positivity rate was 15%, and today we are heading not far from that direction. Over the last 1 week, we have seen close to 100 deaths, which is the highest number we have ever witnessed since our first confirmed case in March.
Among the deaths reported last week was a secondary school head teacher in Mombasa, and the school remains closed. Kenya has recorded at least 56,000 coronavirus cases and more than 1,000 deaths. Isaac Masenge, an official with the Kenya Union of Post-Primary Education Teachers in Nairobi, says the union is concerned about teachers' exposure.
Remember, in day schools, children are coming from home, they're intermingling mingling with the people in matatus, and you can see the multiplier effect they can cause in school, especially the old teachers, all the teachers with the other elements. Currently, as we are moving forward, the schools are also being hit, and therefore we need a proper communique from the national office to give a way forward with the employer together to give a way forward on this issue of teachers with conditions and teachers who are also 55 maybe years and above.
Our attempts to reach officials at the Teachers Service Commission, a state body tasked with managing the hiring and deployment of Kenya's teachers, were unsuccessful. Some critics have been calling for renewed school closures to shield the teachers and students, but the Ministry of Education insists that children are safe in schools and that learning will go uninterrupted. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
Early in October, one of Zimbabwe's biggest holding companies, which focuses on insurance and property, sought approval from its shareholders to move some operations to neighboring Botswana. Experts say the investor environment in Botswana could be a factor behind the restructuring move. Reporter Kuzai Zenwashi has more from Harare.
The restructuring move by First Mutual Holdings comes after a Botswana company, Aleo Capital, acquired about 30% stake in First Mutual's reinsurance business. Markets analyst Lloyd Mlojwa says these many companies see limitations in raising funds on the Zimbabwe Stock Exchange, or ZSE.
There has been a weakness within the exchange in that ultimately it's supposed to be a capital market. And at the moment, we have an environment where there's very limited liquidity, which means that companies that are listed on the exchange or looking to list onto the exchange have got a very limited pool of capital to tap into, which becomes a large problem. And in some cases, obviously, begins to compromise the existence of having an exchange.
There have been several disruptions in Zimbabwe's corporate sector this year as the government has tried to halt the slide of the country's RRTGS currency. The measures include new limits on some of the country's mobile money services, which have become a major way of transacting business in the informal and black markets. Also, the government suspended trading in shares of Old Mutual, one of the country's leading companies, saying its shares were used as a barometer of the black market exchange rate. These measures have rattled confidence for many big companies, but financial analyst Batanai Matsika says there is a bigger problem.
No, I think the confidence is there. I think for issuers or companies, the main constraint is just on the capital raising. To say that, you know, all these ZSE, you know, they're just limited to raising capital in the local currency. So sometimes as businesses, you want to expand. For example, if you talk about the First Mutual transaction.
Matsika says it's a matter of expanding operations into the region.
You want to expand in the region, it would make sense really to sort of raise capital offshore, which means that, you know, they had to go to Botswana and they to drop in a technical partner to actually put funds there. But that being the case, I think the solution is coming through with the Victoria Falls Stock Exchange to say that this is an offshore financial service center.
Last month, the Victoria Falls Exchange began operations running from the tourist town. Trading will be done in foreign currency, offering a new platform for companies to seek capital. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zinawashi from Harare.
New information shows that state-owned enterprises are contributing less and less to Zimbabwe's national treasury. Adigando gives us more on the story.
Finance Minister Mthuli Ncube recently revealed that state-owned enterprises contributed about 12% of the national gross domestic product, down from a peak of 40% in previous years. He told a seminar organized for cabinet members that the 107 state companies lost US$340 million in 2017, well below the expected profit of US$240 million. A new Auditor General report says governance issues account for 80% of the problem hobbling the country. For instance, in many cases, companies paid for goods or services that were never delivered. The 2019 audit report says energy utility company Zimbabwe Electrification Transmission and Distribution Company paid US $4.9 million for transfer. performance 9 years earlier, and they had still not arrived. The Auditor General's reports have chronicled consistent losses at state companies. In 2015, they received $129 in government support while contributing just $7.8 million in dividends. Some participants at the seminar blamed the poor performance of the state-owned companies on underfunding, but economic analyst Gift Mugano disagreed.
And the reason why, even if when the report has been read by the Auditor General, there has not been cracking down on the management or the board, because the politicians are the bosses, they are benefiting from the rot. So that is the real reason. The question as to the parasitic being underfunded is not valid as far as I'm concerned. If it is, it's not issue number one. Issue number one is drought of governance, serious interferences by politicians.
Mugano alleges that costly executive packs for political appointees at the companies and asset stripping have exacerbated the losses in the public entities. He says that despite the passage of the Public Enterprises Governance Act in 2018, very little has changed in arresting the losses. Finance Minister Mthuli Ncube acknowledges that ministries do not have enough resources to fully fund the state-owned companies, which in turn owe $491 million in unremitted taxes. The state-owned companies include giants like the Zimbabwe National Roads Authority, the Grain Marketing Board, the Zimbabwe Electricity Supply Authority, Dairy Board, and the Cold Storage Commission. Government-owned businesses are in nearly every economic sector, including agriculture, banking, mining, and transportation. Prosper Chitambara, another economic analyst, says the losses cannot continue.
It affects development in the economy. When you look at other countries, China, for example, parastatals in China are contributing as much as 45% to gross domestic product. In Zimbabwe, the revelations that the contribution is so very, very worrisome. So what we need, obviously, we need to expedite our reforms targeted at these parastatals. We need to allow private sector participation in terms of ownership. We need to strengthen corporate governance in those parastatals.
Economic analysts such as Chitambara and Mugano say that while strategic entities such as the Zimbabwe Supply Authority, ZESA, and the National Railways of Zimbabwe could not be privatized, they need to be weaned off the national treasury. To do that, they say political interference should be cut down because it hampers transparency and efficiency.
Parcels have been vehicles for rent seeking, for state capture, for personal aggrandizement by politicians. We need to move away from that and allow parastatals that may not be privatized to really run along commercial lines, along good corporate practices going forward.
Some analysts say the Public Enterprises Governance Act somewhat helped by forbidding newly appointed cabinet ministers from dissolving existing company boards. However, they say the law does little to curb crony appointments and doesn't give parliament oversight over public enterprises because the president has the power to approve and dismiss board appointments. Mugano and other economists say reforming the state-owned enterprises is essential if Zimbabwe's economy is going to grow. But Mugano says just putting more taxpayer money into them won't solve the problems unless corruption and political interference end. Reporting for VOA, this is Adigondo in Bulawayo, Zimbabwe.
The Electoral Commission in Ivory Coast says President Alassane Ouattara won re-election with 94% of the vote. The opposition boycotted the vote, arguing Ouattara broke the two-term limit and undermined the country's democratic process. Reuters reported that police in riot gear surrounded the houses of two of Ouattara's main rivals yesterday after the government accused them of creating a parallel administration in defiance of the Ouattara victory declaration. The standoff has raised concerns about instability in the world's top cocoa producer, where a civil war killed 3,000 people in 2010 and 2011 following a disputed election between Ouattara and his predecessor, Laurent Gbagbo. Ouattara, who has been in power for nearly a decade, initially said he would not run again this year, but changed his mind after his party's candidate died suddenly in July. Young girls in Nigeria's north are struggling to remain in school during the COVID-19 pandemic, and aid groups say many face the risk of child marriage. Ifeoke Tang reports from Kano, Nigeria.
15-year-old Umi Ali leads a team of four other girls in a 4x4 phone repair workshop in Kausani Kano. There is no furniture, and they all work on the ground with their legs in cross positions. Dressed in hijabs, these young girls make stipends by replacing faulty phone parts, charging them, and then transferring media files for customers for a fee. Ali says she dropped out of school 4 months ago after she got married, but she's glad she can still work here. I'm happy now that I am in the aspect of repairing phones, she says. I could not repair phones. Now I can. I can also operate laptops and do many other things, Ali says. I'm thankful. In this part of Nigeria, 68% of girls are married before their 18th birthday. With no education, these women aspire only to be wives and mothers, while their male peers go further in their careers, says Amina Hanga, the executive secretary of the Issa Wale Empowerment Initiative. The nonprofit and non-governmental organization creates safe spaces where young girls learn to read, write, and develop vocational skills, including those typically regarded as male-oriented.
The man is supposed to provide, the man is supposed to be there. To do everything, whereas a woman is just to be the wife and have children. Then at one point there was also religion was brought into it, that because the majority here are Muslims, and they were using, it was a misperception or misconception about what religion says, because actually Islam says seek for education no matter where it takes you, and it did not say male or female, it said seek, meaning that both male and female should seek for education.
The Ford Foundation sponsors the empowerment program Pathway to Choice, run by Hanga and other mentors. It has empowered more than 200 girls across several communities. 76% of girls who participated in the program returned to formal schooling. This includes Rabi Salisu, who says other girls in her family never get beyond a primary education. Honestly, at home, they will not allow us to continue school because all my siblings didn't finish school, Salisu says. She says, once you dream of going to school, they will just marry you out. The Nigeria federal government passed the Child Rights Act 2003 that prohibits the marriage and betrothal of children below the age of 18. But 11 states in northern Nigeria have not yet enforced it at the state level. Hanga says the law needs to be enforced in order to create lasting change.
Having laws in place like the Child Rights Act, the Violence Against Persons Prohibition Act, domesticated, having them domesticated in states, and various other policies would also help in ensuring that girls get an education.
The United Nations estimates the coronavirus pandemic has brought about an additional 13 million child brides as a result of the economic strain brought on poor families. But despite the effects of the pandemic, girls like Salisu are fighting to be self-sufficient. I want to grow and help my parents, she says. I don't want to be a burden on my parents or on my husband. So when I have a need, I'll just take my money to meet it, she says. I'm happy to return to school because it is great progress. Ifeok Etan for VOA News, Kano, Nigeria.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiji Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Moby Yabaro, thank you again for tuning in and choosing the Voice of America.
Day by tuning into the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. or check the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. It's the sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.